You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 476, and Randall's joining me as well. Randall, how's it going?
It's going. It's hard to believe there's only 12 more days until football.
All right, yeah. It is right around the corner. We've got a bunch of random topics to get to, but of course, Notre Dame football fall camp talk as well. The media was at their final viewing of fall camp, and Notre Dame is getting ready for Michigan. Some of the topics to talk about, I guess the thing I wanted to start with is I had a dream a couple days ago, and it was about Notre Dame football, so it's relevant. And it was a weird dream because it was, you know, dreams often are your fears are happening. It definitely was a fear. And the dream, in the dream, it was game day. And I woke up and I couldn't remember if the game was going to start at noon or if it was at 3:30 or if it was if it was an evening game or when it was. But I remember getting to wherever I was watching the game, and the game had already, I thought it had already started. But then I was relieved to find out, oh, it didn't start yet. It's just about to start. And so I was so relieved and excited that, oh, well, I didn't miss anything. And the opponent wasn't Michigan, but it was the opening day of Notre Dame football. And there was a few things that stood out. Number one, the defense forced a turnover right before the half. And I didn't really know what the score was, but Khalid Kareem came up with a strip sack, fumble was forced, and Khalid came up with the ball. So Notre Dame had the ball. And then on the ensuing play, I don't know who the quarterback was either, but it was a long pass to Chase Claypool, a catch and run, and he scored a touchdown. And I remember him running down the side beside the end zone to run out more clock instead of just running directly in. He was running on the side, you know, to try to kind of like a video game. And Chris Finke was out there as well, so I guess there's a little bit maybe.
Do you know who the opponent was?
No, I don't know who the opponent was.
Well, let's just say it was Michigan.
Then. I know it wasn't Michigan.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, the halftime score was 49-0. Hey. So I was pretty happy with that. I was disappointed when I woke up, though, and realized that, oh, it's still two more weeks until the actual opener.
Well, I guess we'll see if your dream comes to fruition.
But that's what's been on my mind. Obviously, okay, let's go on to some real topics then. We have some corrections to make. Thank you to Irish Don for tweeting at us. And I don't know how I missed it because I definitely don't know everything about Notre Dame football, and sometimes things slip my mind. However, Randall, you made when we were talking about the offensive line last week, you mentioned that a former defensive player is filling in for Notre Dame on the offensive line.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that?
And I went back and listened to it, and I couldn't believe that. Oh my goodness, I just must have been zoned out for a little bit.
Well. The funny thing was, right before, I had said Elijah Taylor for the offensive line, and the next morning, I don't know why I think I might have been listening to another podcast, I think I was listening to a press conference. It was something, and the next morning, I actually remembered it. I was like, you know what? I said Elijah Taylor when we were talking about the offensive line. And I was driving, I had my notebook from the podcast in it, and I got my notebook and I looked and it did not say Elijah Taylor. Like it says, I had it written down that Trevor Ruland was who I was trying to say. It's right there in my notes. And so I was like, well, it must just be one of those things where I worried that I said it wrong, that I must have just for some reason just thought about it and think I said it wrong. But right here it says in my note Trevor Ruland, so I obviously said it right on the podcast. Well, a couple hours later, Don messaged and said Elijah Taylor, which he had actually thought he was kind of surprised, but Elijah Taylor actually transferred. He's not on the team. So Anyways, that was my bad. I meant to say Trevor Rulon. My notes even said that, but yeah, I got it messed up. So
we last year we had done the what did we get right, what did we get wrong when we talk about the upcoming games, and then when we'd recap it a few days later. So I think we're just going to keep this corrections.
You mean as far as predictions for the game?
Well, yeah, or how we think, how we expect things to go.
Yeah.
And so whenever there is something that we got wrong, that's going to be under our corrections. Maybe we'll get a little jingle to go along with it. So, Twitter listener
out there.
So you're
saying we'll make some more predictions than what we normally...
I think we make plenty the way it is. But when we do get something wrong, and if we realize it, we'll mention it, of course. But if we don't, or you can tweet at us, at Irish Sports Talk, or mention it over on the forums. And the forums are free to sign up, by the way. And then we'll be sure to mention it on the ensuing podcast. Anyway, a couple other small things. Notre Dame is playing Rudy again this year before the season.
Oh, it's this upcoming Friday night.
Before the season starts. Did you go last year? I think you did.
Yeah, I did. It was a great evening. It was a lot of fun to actually watch Rudy. I've seen it many times before, but it was actually fun to be in the Notre Dame Stadium watching, you know, where this movie actually happened. And they even, you know, threw in some things like the ribbon boards around the stadium, like the score. Like at the end of the movie, you know, when it said the sack for, you know, a loss, whatever, they had all the stats up there on the stadium. Not on the Jumbotron, because that's where you watch the movie, but on the skirt, I think they call them the skirt board, like around the stadium and on the scoreboard. To mimic the actual play in the movie. So last year the weather was perfect. Hopefully it'll be like that again this year. And if you get a chance, go. You can sit anywhere in the stadium. We got to sit in the nice, comfortable seats down closer to the field. So it was a good time.
And it's free.
Exactly.
All you need to do is just show up. Doors open at 6:30. Movie starts an hour later at 7:30. And assuming it's nice weather, it'd be a fun evening to go to. How is the sound? Because, you know, it's a little echoey, typically, a little bit echoey when the announcer, you know, says something. Is it echoey when you're watching the movie?
No. It was fine. It's just like watching them on the Jumbotron. I mean, not like the intro and stuff that they do
so
now.
So when they have the music, it's...
Yeah.
All right.
If you go before, I know last year if you sent out a picture on Instagram, use the hashtag, they put your picture up on the Jumbotron. So I'd taken a couple pictures. I had one of my boys along and taken a picture of him, so he was up on the Jumbotron. So that's something you can do as well. You can, if you do use that, make sure you're ready to take a picture when they show it on the Jumbotron, just something cool to see. But definitely go if you get a chance.
All right, something Notre Dame brought back from a while ago, Trick Shot Monday.
Yeah, I thought they'd kind of gone away. Was it 2016 it did? Just because they were losing a lot of games. In the 4-8 season they were, and they only do it after a win. But and Joe Schmidt used to be one of the main guys doing it.
He was a strong proponent and definitely helped carry the torch very well. And it seems like Chris Fink is that new Joe Schmidt as far as when it comes to Trick Shot Monday.
Yeah, he was kind of lead guy doing it, and then there was a couple walk-ons doing it with him. We'll see if it kind of takes off, get more players involved. But retweeted it, and I think it's something fun to do. I mean, it's just another thing that the players are doing for the fans. I mean,
and then the AP poll came out, Randall, and Notre Dame continues to look pretty or be valued pretty highly, I would say. They came in at number 12. And you mentioned, Randall, that there was supposedly votes cast all the way from number 4 to 21.
Number 5 to number 21 was kind of the spread on voters. So I guess people are having a hard time, or the press is having a hard time ranking them or knowing where Notre Dame is actually going to be. But Notre Dame has quite a few opponents that are ranked as well. So Stanford, Notre Dame's number 12, Stanford's number 13, Michigan's 14, USC 15, Florida State 19, and Virginia Tech is 20, And they got some other guys that, or some other teams that had some votes. Northwestern got some votes. And so that always changes. Like, we've seen that before. But as of right now, a lot of Notre Dame's opponents are ranked. So, are you shocked by the number 12? Is that kind of where you would put them? Or?
Yeah, that's where I would put them. I am shocked that's where they're at in a lot of these national polls. And I'm a little concerned that the line is at 1.5 for Michigan starting out here, because I really expect Notre Dame to be favored definitely this opener and really throughout the season. This is at home, so this does concern me a little bit. Going into it, I expected it to be a very close game. I mean, I don't expect this to be even a 10-point win for Notre Dame would have been like, wow.
Wait, you said 49-0.
Hell, that was the dream.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm back to reality. So this is a little surprising, and it does make me a little bit cautious seeing that line.
Well, Michigan did announce today that Shea Patterson will be the starter on day one. So everybody seems to think that's going to be great. Shea Patterson had some good games, but then he also played some horrible games. So I guess we'll have to see which one of those guys shows up.
So. All right, we have to talk about the uniforms. And generally, the consensus was that they're awful. And I would just like to say, this is what you guys get. Everyone is always complaining about how bad the Shamrock uniforms are. And this year, yeah, they're truly awful. And I think everyone, have you heard anyone who said these aren't the worst ones ever?
The closest that anyone's come to liking them are Yankee fans.
No, but does any average Notre Dame fan say there are worse Shamrock uniforms than these?
Very few.
That's my point. You guys have been complaining so hard and so long, and now look what you've created.
Well,
because I agree, these are bad.
What do you mean? But the complaint should have made for a good-looking uniform. I haven't been a fan for a lot of them. They're like, just whatever. I think maybe because the expectations seem to be so high, and then you just once they actually come out, you're like, oh, okay, whatever. Last year, the new Rockne one, I love those. That was the first time I went out and bought a jersey at full price. I have that one, and I'm not going to trade it in for this, the one this year, that's for sure. What I'm shocked about is that it seemed like Under Armour's put out the last few years has always been about Notre Dame, like its history. There's like different things with the uniform, and it's still Notre Dame, like the little small details on the uniforms that you have. The complaint I always had is that you don't notice them. Like, during the game, you don't notice them unless you zoom in or, like, you see them. You're standing next to someone wearing it. That's kind of the complaint I had. But, you know, every stripe has, you know, stands for something. They went the complete opposite and went all Yankees on this. I mean, like, it's not even... They went overboard, in my opinion. They went the other extreme.
They probably thought, we can't please the Notre Dame crowd, so we may as well make something that Yankee fans will buy.
We did talk about it on the forums, and a couple of the guys are Yankee fans, so they don't mind them. And Solon actually mentioned that, you know, out in New York, it's creating some buzz, and people actually like them out there, so they might be getting some new fans in New York.
Oh.
But it's just, I guess you did for the, when they played at Boston, they had the green for the green wall. You know, it was kind of, you know, they did have that. But this is just horrible. I will say that some of the other gear, like their sweatshirts and T-shirts, I actually liked some of those. I mean, it's, especially like the T-shirt, it's basically like navy blue, and it has a round, probably supposed to be like a baseball with the pinstripe, you know, but it's still Notre Dame. Basically, we've turned the Yankees into a football team versus, you know, it. I don't know. We did get a somebody sent us a picture of there was a garbage truck that said Shamrocks. I have to look. I had tweeted it out. I can look.
It was a waste management, like a poop truck, right? A sewage.
No,
sewage
it truck? Was it was a garbage truck.
Oh, it was just a garbage truck. Okay, yeah. I thought it was actually a.
No. Oh, here it is. It says Shamrock Disposal on the side. And Anyways, they just said, is this where the new Shamrock unis go? So, hardly anyone is impressed with them. But no. I'm not ready to get rid. I like the idea of a Shamrock Series uniform. I do. It creates a lot of buzz. It's something to look forward to. It's something different for one game. Some people are saying, oh, just stop. But
no, I enjoy.
It's one game. That's what it comes down to. It's one game, but I think they could have done better.
I'm not in the camp of stopping doing special uniforms or having the Shamrock Series. I think it's a good thing. I'm in favor of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk Notre Dame football, and then we've got some other just college football topics too. But
well, I guess I'll just quick throw in the good thing is fall camp being over with. This past weekend, nothing crazy happened that we know of. That's usually when that was the weekend Max Redfield and Kevin Stefferson and them went out and got arrested. It seemed like last few years something has happened that weekend. Guys are out of camp, they're excited, and they do something stupid and get into trouble.
Tavon, too.
Yes. And so far, it seems like they've gotten through that. They might have learned their lesson or the coaches got the point across. So that's the good news. So,
on the forums, we were talking a little bit about the wide receiver group and the switch that
Isaiah Robertson
made to, well, from safety to Buck, and then now
I mean,
to
even to Rover. I mean, based linebacker, okay, he tried a couple different linebacker positions as well.
So, I think that the wide receiver group is weak. They haven't proven anything. I know I'm in a little bit of a minority, definitely among the fans, and definitely polar opposite with Solon on that. But and I know the media has been reporting that Miles Boykin looks great, Chase Claypool looks great most of the time, and even Chip Kelly has said that he has had a big turnaround. So I do think Chase Claypool, you know, has made some changes with consistency, but he still hasn't shown it consistently in a season. And so I'm just not ready to have a whole lot of confidence for this group. So I think part of the reason for the move was there's not anything proven there. Yes, there's athletes there. There's some old guys there. But nothing's been proven. There's no returning guy that has proven the previous year that he's the man. And he can be a number one threat that can step up and will make a play.
Yeah, it was odd to me. At first, I was like, why are they adding another wide receiver? Does that mean they don't have faith in the guys that they currently have? Or what's going on? But Isaiah Robertson was buried at safety, buried at linebacker. I mean, even though the depth isn't that good at linebacker, he just didn't seem like he would fit or have a chance there. And obviously, wide receiver's the one spot where, like I said, everybody's got a chance to do something, to compete, because nobody's proven, even though it seems half of the players on the team are wide receivers, it's like, oh, they just move another guy. I mean, Joe Wilkins moved from defense to the wide receiver group. And Avery Davis, you know, is wide receiver running back. They did move Jafar Armstrong away. They did move Jafar Armstrong away from receiver to running back. So there you lose one.
But I did see that
you have a lot of freshmen coming in.
Elijah Taylor was tweeting Dell Alexander.
Yeah.
But potentially coming back as a wide receiver.
Hey, it might be. So, but I think it had more to do with just
he wasn't going to get on the field.
More to do with
not
defense. Getting on the field on defense. Then he has a chance at wide receiver, although he did look kind of lost out there, but he just made the switch to wide receiver, and so we'll kind of see how that turns out. I mean, I thought he would make an impact at safety. It seemed early on in his career at Notre Dame he was going to.
I thought he was going to be a stud.
So
on defense, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we'll find out. But
how does the wide receiver lineup look right now?
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. They basically have five guys for the rotation. I mean, there's five guys that are kind of ahead of everyone else, and that's obviously Boykin, the number one receiver. I know you want to say something about that, Ruben, but Claypool, Chris Fink, Brian Kelly raved again about where he's at and then Michael Young, and then freshman Kevin Austin has really stepped it up. So those seem to be the five guys that are going to get the majority of the receptions and are going to be out in the field.
And I'm just telling you, I didn't see Miles Boykin in my dream. No. This kind of reminds me of last year when Brian Kelly was talking about how the leadership of
Freddie Canteen
and who was the other
Cam Smith,
you know, these guys are going to contribute. And they did play. They got kind of banged up, but you could, it didn't look like they were going to contribute even when they were out there. It just didn't work. And that's kind of how I feel a little bit with Miles Boykin. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's a guy that, he's not going to be a burner. I don't think that's changed, but maybe he can be a guy that can convert on third and seven, can get an 8-yard.
Thing with him, he's been showing it in practice. He's the one guy that stepped up in practice and has taken on the role as the number one guy. Claypool has stepped it up as well. And they're not talking about him, learning the traits and it's up to him. They're not talking like that anymore about Chase Claypool like they were in the spring. Some of the coaches even talked about it in their interviews about, how he's doing much better. And you can credit Sam Mustipher for a lot of that, for kind of taking him under his wing and showing him that he needs to step it up. Fink would be your third starter, and they rave about how much faster he's more explosive, sticking his foot in the ground. Kelly said he has more power and strength, and those are the reports you hear from the practices as well. And I think part of the reason he's in front of Michael Young hasn't been 100% healthy, and so Fink has kind of taken advantage of that. But I think you're still going to see a lot of Young out there as well. But Fink is one of those guys. I mean, he's got to show it too. We've heard it before, but then, you don't see it on the field. And that's kind of with all of these receivers.
Yeah.
But then you have Kevin Austin, which has been doing very good for a freshman. He's actually the first freshman that was named one of the players of the day, Brian Kelly's players of the day in practice. And, Kelly also talked about how he can how he recovers extremely well. Like, he came from a good strength and conditioning program in high school, and he can take a lot of reps. Some of the freshmen are starting to hit that wall a little bit, and Austin's one guy that they can just keep giving reps. So,
and this is a little counter to my argument or my thinking about Miles Boykin not going to emerge as one of the top three receivers, because Will Fuller, even as it's hard for freshmen to make an impact. Even Will Fuller only had 6 receptions. He did play in 12 games, but he only had 6 receptions in those games. And he had guys ahead of him were T.J. Jones, Tavares Daniels, and Chris Brown. Those were the guys that were ahead of him. So he did have some quality wide receivers there. And I do think that's where the differences. I don't consider Miles Boykin
a first-year player.
Well, I don't consider him a real quality wide receiver. Chase Claypool, definitely the potential is there, but hasn't proven it on a consistent basis. Yeah. Flashes here and there.
You still hear about how they give up on certain plays. And even when it comes to quarterbacks, there was one the one interception that Brian Wimbush threw in practice was because the receiver didn't, which was Braden Lenz, didn't run the right route. And so, obviously another young guy, but they still, which some of that, I think they throw the younger receivers in there just to give the quarterbacks a little more of a challenge as to, if they do bring in a guy that they're going to make some mistakes, and what are you going to do with that? How are you going to respond to that? But there's just so many questions with the wide receiver. You'd think they, one day I feel very confident about it, then the next day I'm like, well.
I want to throw some other freshman wide receivers at you. How many receptions do you think Equanimeous had as a freshman? He had some real quality guys ahead of him. He had Will Fuller, Chris Brown, Torrey Hunter Jr.
I'm going to say like 5.
He had 1.
And then, and Kevin, wasn't it? I almost think, wasn't it from Brandon Wimbush?
I'm not sure.
I think it was.
Then, in 2016, Kevin Stefferson as a freshman. he had an incredible freshman season compared to the other freshmen the last few years. He had 25 catches and 460 yards.
Yeah. There's one freshman that had an extremely
good year. It can happen. It's just, it's not every year that it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
That someone emerges as a freshman. Anyway.
You don't need to have a good freshman year to be a star wide receiver down the road.
No, you don't. All right. Do you want to talk a little bit about the quarterbacks?
Yeah. I personally am kind of tired about hearing how good Ian Book is in practice and should he start and on and on. Just because practice, it's practice. The quarterbacks aren't getting hit. Brandon Wimbush can't run like he would in a game. And just in my mind, Book, when you just in practice, Book is probably always going to look better than Wimbush because he is a passer. The thing that makes Brandon Wimbush so good is his ability to run, which then creates a better passing game, opens up the passing game for him. Brandon Wimbush is the guy. I'm just kind of tired of hearing about Book still being, should they have him? Just this argument. Like, let's give all the reps. I mean, not give all, but right now, which I think they are, Brandon Wimbush is the starter, and they're going to start practicing like that, preparing for Michigan. So the reps, the snap count's going to change a little bit. But I still see so much on social media about, well, we should probably start Ian Book. Do you, anyways, I won't keep going.
I can't wait to watch the lack of comments when those same fans get their way and maybe Ian Book does come in and start or comes in for a quarter. And then the drop-off in the red zone conversion rate and how there's going to be crickets when that happens.
Yeah. Here's one thing that does help with Ian Book being as good as he is. Brian Kelly talked about how they don't have to worry about Brandon Wimbush running and getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
See, that was one of the things that happened even last year. Close to the end of the year, you had to protect him and limit him sometimes because you didn't know what you had in a backup quarterback. And Brian Kelly even mentioned it. The coaches talked about how they don't have to do that now because if Brandon Wimbush, you're not just going to throw him out there to get hurt. But
you
have a quality backup that can come in and still win a game for you, which is going to make it that much better for Brandon Wimbush and everybody involved because he can go out there, play his game without worrying about getting hurt and the team losing the next.
Well, I'm sure he'll be worried about it, but it's not like the coaching will call plays to try to.
Well, I guess it depends. Because
he doesn't
want to
get hurt.
No. But I'm saying, I'm sure when the coaches tell him, like, slow it down. You don't have to run because if you get hurt, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He's going to win. He's going to try to win the game.
Yeah.
He doesn't like hearing from the coach that he needs to slow down his or
he needs
take
to avoid
off
taking
less
a hit.
Or stay in the pocket because the chance if he gets hurt, they're in trouble. So I think that's going to help Brandon Wimbush more than anything else is just the ability to use his run game to open up the passing game for him.
You know, one way I could see having two quarterbacks playing being an advantage for Notre Dame is keeping Brandon healthy because Randall, if he runs as much as he did last year, he's going to get hurt. He's not going to play the whole season.
Well,
whereas if you and I'm not even sure this is a good idea. This just popped in my head right now. But if you would have two series a game where you have Ian Book come in and play. To just take away some of those reps from Brandon, it probably would help lengthen his season, his help with his durability. I'm not sure it's a good idea.
If Notre Dame has a good lead, then yes, but they have to get in the foot. Whenever I'm watching a football game and the quarterback, I don't care what team it is, the quarterback starts switching, you just, if it's like a hopeless feeling. You know that they're trying. It's like the last resort to try to win this game.
Especially if
that's how the bowl game felt. It turned out okay.
Especially if you're playing Stanford or some kind of team where you don't get nearly as many possessions and you don't know if you're going to get the ball
the 4-8
10
season,
times.
I was there when they benched Kaiser and put in Zaire.
Against Stanford?
Yeah.
Okay.
And as soon as they did that, you just knew that it was basically over. Like, it would be a miracle for them to win. When that happens, it's usually not a good sign.
But that was in a different, a little bit of a different scenario where they're looking for a spark, whereas I would envision this approach more a, this is just part of the game plan.
I think they should be quicker to take him out with a lead.
Kind of like Notre Dame did when they went down to Texas, you know, just like that.
Oh, exactly. I was at that game as well.
Well,
what I'm saying, I think they should, here you can take Book, I mean, take Wimbush out quicker and put in Book, because often what I hate, when they take out players too early, then it seems like the other team makes a comeback, and then all of a sudden you're scrambling to try to get back in the game. You won't have that drop-off with Book coming in.
Book is definitely a better quarterback than I ever expected him to be.
Yeah, he surprised a lot of people. He even surprised me, even though I knew that he could play at Notre Dame. I was on the side that they're recruiting because they know he can play. A lot of people just had him written off as, you know, a guy that's not going to, he's going to be signaling plays from the sideline his whole career. So, but anyways, the last year when Brian Wimbush dropped down started dropping is when he stopped running as much. The second half of the season when he started to get banged up. Remember his hand got hurt?
He was banged up, Randall.
I know, but I'm saying that's.
Fewer snaps.
That's when everybody started questioning his ability. Before that, when he was fine, he was running, he was throwing. Notre Dame was winning by double digits. There was no question. Things started to change. He got banged up a little bit. He stopped running, and they started throwing the ball for no reason. And that's when people started questioning whether he should be the quarterback or not.
And his confidence dropped then, too.
Well, yeah.
And Brian Kelly talked about when he's confident, this offense can't be stopped.
Yeah.
And he's definitely, he doesn't have nerves of steel. Maybe that's something that can be developed this season. But one of the things, Randall, about bringing in Ian Book sooner than later when Notre Dame has a nice lead, and I don't think we're talking about, you know, the beginning of the third quarter against Michigan when Notre Dame's up by 10. I don't think that we're not talking about that clearly.
Yeah.
But one thing, let's say it is against a Ball State and Notre Dame has comfortably. Don't you still want them to try to develop Brandon Wimbush's game like they did last year? They you could see it. I mean, they were clearly trying to force the ball through the air to try to help Brandon see more things and get more development time.
That's a good question, because when you do have a good lead, they start running the ball.
Yeah.
Unless
they didn't, you know, a couple times last year.
Yeah, unless they. Yeah, they might try it. I don't know. But what we'll have, they're going against one of the best, probably the best defense they'll face all year in Michigan. And so this conversation about Book and Wimbush is still going to be going after the Michigan game. I think it will. Because there's not a lot of room for error with the fans on Brandon Wimbush. Like, if he makes any kind of mistake, most people are going to be calling it for Book.
Oh, yeah.
I still think that with Wimbush, you have that one or two games more. You have a better chance of winning a few games more than you do with Book.
I think it's definitely more of a risk because he might miss some open guys that could convert to first downs. But definitely, for Notre Dame to go undefeated, it's going to be because Brandon Wimbush is playing, and he's playing well.
Yeah.
The defense is going to be the backbone, but for Notre Dame to win every game, they need something from Brandon Wimbush.
Yeah.
All right.
But the thing that's going to put pressure on him, too, is the running backs. I don't have a lot on the running backs, but they need to have a running game. I mean, that helped last year as well, at the end of the year when Josh Adams was having a Heisman contender year at the first half of the season. That helped Wimbush a lot.
It did.
And this running back situation is a little in question.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll see. Brian Kelly said Jafar Armstrong just doesn't break down. He just keeps coming back and can take a lot of reps. So that's good to see. And
that might be the best news.
The closer and closer we get to the season starting, the more and more I think that Jafar Armstrong will have a huge impact on this season.
Jafar Armstrong might be the best news coming out of fall camp.
Yeah.
Because the question marks, I mean, definitely at wide receiver there's question marks, But there's serious need at running back.
Especially with Dexter being out the first round. You know what? Talking about Dexter, the one thing I do like about him, he's still very involved with the team.
Yeah, didn't...
He hasn't taken... He is not like Kevin Stepherson was. Remember the body language?
That is true.
And Stepherson, like... He
very disengaged.
Yes, on the sideline, not exactly disengaged, and Dexter is not doing that.
In fact, running backs coach even mentioned that what was it about Dexter that he was the guy that was cheering the hardest when some of the younger guys were moving the ball and making plays.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he'll come out running out there on the field the first game. That would be the shock of the year.
What would be more surprising? Ian Book is the starting quarterback or Dexter Williams playing in game one?
It'd be bad news if Ian Book is playing. It'd be exciting if Dexter was playing.
All right, anything more on the offensive line? We talked about our correction.
Well, the offensive line, Robert Hainsey was obviously banged up, had an inflamed tendon, but he was planning to be... Brian Kelly said he'd be back tomorrow, which would be Tuesday, and they'll get back to their starting lineup. But kind of in his place, you know, Josh Lugg was getting more reps, and so some of the other guys were, but it looks like he'll be back. They just didn't, there was no point in pushing him to, you know, so that his tendon is still inflamed and, you know, they go into the season with dealing with that. So they were taking their time and making sure he was completely ready to go, and that should be tomorrow. So not a whole lot has changed there.
Darnell Ewell.
Darnell Ewell has actually been taking some or been working with the offensive line some as a guard. Not sure what all is going on there. Is he just that buried at defensive line? But he hasn't panned out so far. Kind of basically when he showed up, he was not in the shape he needed to be, and he still isn't really. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that situation, but he has been working some with the offensive line, which is kind of odd too, because it's not like they need another guard, but hey, you never know. They might as well try it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but you might as well try it. And maybe you'll find a Jafar Armstrong.
All right. And then the kickoff rule change, you know, we had, talked about that before. That's going to go into effect. Previous years, Brian Kelly, it appeared like the kicking team, they were trying to kick it just outside, short of the end zone.
Yeah.
But trying to get as much hang time as possible. And who knows what's going to end up happening actually on game day. And with a new rule change, you can fair catch it even if you're inside
the 25-yard
line.
Yeah,
but if you're outside of the end zone or if you're at the 5-yard line, if you're short of the end zone, you can still throw a catch it and come out to the 25-yard line.
Well, Polian was asked about that. You know, how are they going to treat that? You know, are they going to try to kick it out of the end zone or are they going to try to pin it inside the 5-yard line? And he said it's going to be a week to week. It's going to be opponent based as far as what they do. So, you know, they do want to – I think Brian Kelly's pretty disappointed with this new rule because, according to him, Jonathan Dorr, doing kickoffs, they finally have a kicker that can pin it inside the 5-yard line. I mean, they've been practicing that, and he's been doing good. And now it seems like they can't take full advantage of that because the opposing team can just fair catch it. But they are working on that, so it'll be based on opponent, from what Polian was saying, on whether they just kick it out of the end zone or they'll try to pin them inside a certain yard. I think it's going to take a few games for teams to figure out where that... Even every team, their returners have to figure out, you know, there's a lot more pressure on the return team as far as when do you fair catch it. You know, it was the end zone. Do you come out or do you stay in? Now it's where do I draw the line? You know, what's coming at me? When do I decide to run? There's a lot more on the returner. I'm not a fan of all these new rules with the kickoff stuff. Just, it's football. You're scared of getting hurt, don't play. That's my opinion. There's a lot of people that would love to have the opportunity to play and work towards the NFL. And so it's a risk you take. Every job takes a risk, and I think that's one of those risks you take. Yeah, it's horrible when somebody gets hurt, but if you're worried about it, don't play.
Mm-hmm.
And then with punter, Tyler Newsom has been booming some kicks, and Brian Kelly even stopped practice, blew his whistle and stopped everything to watch him kick and put a little more pressure on him. And he's getting... His hang time is, he's been, I think he did two in a row, it was like 4.5 seconds of hang time. And Brian Kelly went over and hugged him after one of them and was talking about how he's a hugger at the press conference. So he is doing very well. It looks like he's even improved his punting.
Hopefully it was more consistent. It was never a question about how far could he boot it, but it was a question of consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love it if we'd have a punter or a special teams unit that could flip the field.
Yeah.
Again, that's something that if Notre Dame's going to go undefeated, special teams is also going to have to play a role, especially in these close games against your Stanfords, your USC, Florida States, Michigan, of course, too.
Yeah. Brian Polian, there was a question asked in the press conference about his voice. You know, he always loses his voice. But Brian Kellingly joked and said, well, he's even louder in the meetings. So I guess he's just loud all the time. But
remember those Halls commercials where the golfer was trying to yell four?
How was that?
It was a while ago. I think he could get a gig.
I was watching Hard Knocks with the Browns,
mm-hmm.
and the one coach there did, he was losing his voice and yelling, and some company from California sent him two boxes of some kind of cough drop.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, there they got airtime now on Hard Knocks, so I'm sure that's why, but.
All right. Anything more on special teams to talk about?
The kickers all seem... You got three guys doing kicks, so you got a punter, field goal kicker, and a kickoff guy, so they can all focus on what they're doing. It seems like they're all doing very well at their individual job, so...
All right.
The return guy, they're still figuring that out. Fink is the punt returner, pretty much, and then kickoffs, there's still a lot of guys in the mix, but even some defensive players, so... I don't know, that's not good if they're still trying to figure that out. But I think
some of the problems with the return games have been as much on the person returning it or the player returning it as it has been the players blocking as well.
Yeah, but what it tells me is don't expect to have kicks returned for touchdowns.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Head on over to the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. Was there one other thing, Randall?
Oh, I was just on the defense real quick. Dalen Hayes had tendonitis, which is why he wasn't out there with the first team. But there wasn't a whole lot of other things. Coney, his SWAT team came in last. And so they had to come in earlier for practice or lifting. And he was always there at 6:45. He was always the first guy there. So he was doing a good job pushing the guys to get there, taking some leadership. So that was good to see. But, yeah, otherwise, in Dalen Hayes' absence, Justin Adamalola and Jameer Jones got some more playing time and got some reps. So Justin Adamalola is a true freshman, so maybe it's good to have him get some reps. And Jameer Jones is kind of buried, seems like. So, and then one last thing, we talked about Freddie Canteen earlier. He did have another season-ending injury, so... Poor guy just can't seem to catch a break, but I think he will have another year of eligibility then, or probably granted a sixth year with all his injuries, but we'll see. So anyways, that's all I got.
All right, if you guys want to talk Notre Dame football, you can talk for free at irishsportstalk.net. That's forums.irishsportstalk.net. Head on over there, sign up. It's quick and easy, and if you want to, follow us on Twitter, and you can join the conversation there. We will be doing some polls as the season gets closer, with some over and under predictions, and you can help with those questions and give your feedback on that.
As the season get closer, next Monday, We're supposed to do our preview of the Michigan game.
No, well,
or next week.
Next week, yeah. So, until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.